If you'll help me, just welcome Pastor Allison. She's going to come and preach this morning. So let's welcome her as she comes.
Thank you, Mike. As you mentioned, my name is Allison, and I'm the executive pastor here at The River. So good to be here with you today. So we're currently in the season of Lent, the 6 weeks leading up to Easter. And at The River, we call this time 40 Days of Faith. This year, in our sermon series, we're exploring together how faith can help us navigate the anxieties of modern life. So far, we've explored anxieties around a number of topics, including money and relationships. And today, we're going to spend some time thinking together about failure and success. Before we dive in, I want to offer the short caveat that we've been mentioning throughout this sermon series. Faith can be very helpful when thinking about anxiety, but it is by no means the only tool at our disposal. Personally, as someone who struggles with anxiety, I find it helpful to have lots of tools available to me. Some resources that I turn to include therapy, medication, supportive relationships, fresh air, and my faith. So with that being said, let's dive into today's topic, failure and success. These are things we can often become anxious about. It is easy to begin worrying about whether or not we will be successful in the various areas of our lives. And also to lose sleep wondering what might happen should we fail. What does it mean to succeed or to fail? One simple definition of success is the accomplishment of an aim or purpose. And so then failure is the opposite, the non-fulfillment of an aim or purpose. Sometimes successes and failures are easy to identify. Have you heard of Pinterest fails? Whether it's crafts, cakes, or other DIY projects, you've probably seen articles compiling failed attempts to recreate the beautiful images you can find on social media. Here are a few examples. Sometimes it's easy to identify success and failure, but other times it can be more complicated. Take a business, for example. What measures should we use to evaluate whether a business is a success or a failure? There are so many options we could consider, including profit, popularity, growth, product quality, customer satisfaction, job creation, working conditions, and environmental impact, just to name a few. It is easy to imagine a company excelling in some areas, but not in others. We see this every day. So how then do we go about classifying? Do we prioritize one metric, say profit, over all others? Things get even more complicated when you try to categorize a human life. And yet, we do this to ourselves and others all the time. We say or think things like, wow, he's so successful. I'm nowhere near as successful as her. I feel like I'm failing at life. Sometimes, we don't feel successful even if others would describe us that way. Have you heard of Claude Monet? He's one of my favorite painters. Monet was one of the founders of Impressionism. You've probably seen some of his famous paintings of water lilies or flowers or haystacks. Though he struggled financially for many years, Monet did eventually experience critical and financial success during his lifetime. But even when he didn't feel successful inside. Later in his life, he wrote to a friend, "Age and chagrin have worn me out. My life has been nothing but a failure, And all that's left for me to do is to destroy my paintings before I disappear. And Monet did destroy many of his paintings, at least 500. Fortunately for us, he did not destroy all of them. This story makes me so sad. Despite all of his accomplishments and his beautiful artistic contributions to the world, Monet still felt like he wasn't good enough. He experienced outward success, but did not feel successful inside. To help us think more about failure and success, I want us to take a look at a passage from the book of Matthew. In this passage, Jesus told a parable, a story that makes a comparison to help us understand a larger point. Now, many parables are meant to help us understand God better by saying something like, "Look, God is like this." But other parables do something a bit different. They say something like, "This is not what God is like." A famous example of this kind of parable is the story of the persistent widow and the unjust judge. Today's parable also falls into this second category. So be sure to keep that in mind as we begin reading the passage. "For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one, he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. At once the one who had received the 5 talents went off and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money." Scholars disagree about how much a talent would be worth in today's dollars, but some estimate that 1 talent was equal to about 20 years of pay for a day laborer. 1 talent, not to mention 5, was a significant amount of money. So in this story, the slave owner entrusted his slaves with significant sums of money. It's not stated, but it was implied that they would take the master's money and do something with it to make a profit. All but one of the slaves were able to do this. The story continues. "After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, 'Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, 'Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' The master was pleased with the first 2 servants. Sorry, some translations say servants. The one I'm using says slaves. And the profit they had made. And so he praised them accordingly. But he was not happy when he heard what the 3rd slave had done. Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours.' But his master replied, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Wow, pretty intense passage, right? The master was very angry that the third slave had not made him a prophet. He called him wicked, lazy, and worthless, and said he should be thrown into the outer darkness. Fortunately for us, God is not like this slave owner. Remember earlier when I said that this is one of those parables that helps us to understand what God is not like? God does not want a master-servant relationship with us, or master-slave relationship with us, but instead wants our friendship. In the book of John, Jesus said, "I do not call you servants or slaves any longer, but I have called you friends." God does not want to inspire our fear, but rather our love. God is rooting for our success, but does not want to motivate it through fear. Fear is often what drives us to pursue success and to avoid failure. To a certain extent, fear can be healthy, motivating, and helpful. But too much fear can be crippling. In today's story, we saw how fear of the harsh master crippled the man with one talent. When failure is deemed unacceptable, inaction can sometimes seem like the safest choice. Has this ever happened to you? Have you ever been so afraid of failing that it's felt impossible to take a risk, to make a change, or to try something new? The other two slaves were able to push through their fear, but what choice did they really have? Yes, they were successful at making a profit, but that chronic fear and anxiety had to have taken a toll on their well-being. The same can be said for us. Living with chronic fear of failure can negatively impact our health, mental health, and relationships. This story is told to show us what God is not like. And yet, too often, Christians pick up and use language from this story. It is not uncommon when someone passes away to hear Christians profess their belief that the departed soul was met by God with these words: "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into your rest." On the one hand, these words seem nice. Who wouldn't want to hear that they have lived their life well? Who wouldn't want to be invited to rest? But let's not forget that these are the words of the harsh master, not of an unconditionally loving God. The problem with these words is that they reinforce a dynamic where we have to earn praise and earn rest through good works and righteous living. Is this how God operates? Not necessarily. In the first creation account in Genesis 1, God said that the first humans were very good. God said this before they had accomplished anything beyond bearing the image of God. God's praise came before they followed through with actions to be fruitful and multiply and care for creation. Then there's Jesus' story. When Jesus was baptized, just as he was coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove upon him. And a voice came from the heavens, "You are my beloved Son. With you I am well pleased." The timing of these words from heaven is significant. They came at the very beginning of Jesus' public ministry, before he had amazed with his teaching and healing and miracles, before he suffered and died in service of love. God's affirmation of his worthiness came first. And we see something similar when it comes to rest. In the Old Testament, we see God invite God's people to observe the Sabbath, a weekly day of rest. This day of rest did not have to be earned. It was not available only on weeks when one worked really hard. No, it was offered unconditionally as a good gift to God's people. We may not live under the rule of a slave owner who can dole out punishment or praise, but that does not mean that we are not still operating under a praise-punishment framework. So often, we pursue success in its various forms in order to secure the positive regard of those around us, whether that be relatives, friends, peers, coworkers, neighbors, authority figures, and so on. And likewise, we try to avoid failure so that we do not have to experience criticism, judgment, or pity from those around us. Sometimes we internalize these outside voices and perspectives, further reinforcing the cycle. When we do this, our moods and sense of self-worth can fluctuate based on our performance. We feel good when we succeed, at least for a little while, and feel terrible when we fail. I can't help but wonder if this is what happened to Claude Monet. Had he internalized the negative voice of his father, who was not supportive of his artistic endeavors, or of the critics who mocked his style in the early days of his career? What would Monet have needed to finally feel good inside, to finally feel successful? Perhaps there was some external measure that would have helped him to do this, but I wonder if something needed to shift internally. What might it have looked like for Claude Monet to step outside of the praise-punishment framework, and how might that change things for us? This brings me to my first practical suggestion. Start from a place of worth. Unlike the harsh master, God says we are worthy from the start. We don't need to be successful in order to be affirmed in who we are. And failure doesn't have the power to diminish our worth. What might it be like to really internalize these truths and to pursue success from this starting point? Could this help to reduce our anxiety? Might failure feel just a little bit less terrifying? Could we discover new sources of motivation that are more life-giving? Of course, we would still have to deal with the practical implications of success and failure, but it seems to me that if we really knew that our worth was not at stake, we might feel a little bit freer to take risks and to try new things. We might get a little more sleep at night. The weight on our shoulders might feel just a bit lighter. If we really understood these truths about ourselves and others, it also seems to me that we would be far more careful about applying the label of success or failure to human beings. Yes, the projects or endeavors we pursue can succeed or fail, but we do not need to view ourselves through these lenses. A human life is far too rich and complex and interesting to be bound by such limiting descriptions. So let's stop puffing ourselves up or putting ourselves down with these kinds of labels. My second practical suggestion is to define success for yourself. One interesting aspect of today's parable is that each of the men received a different sum of money. One received 5 talents, another 2 talents, and another 1 talent. In this story, these different sums result in a ranking of abilities. But differences do not always have to be viewed that way. Like the men in this story, each of us has different talents. We have different values, interests, temperaments, passions, strengths, ability, training, and resources. We come from different cultures, hold different identities, and have different life experiences. We all share equal value and worth, but we are not identical to each other. And so, who we are, in all our uniqueness, should naturally shape how we understand and approach success. In 2019, Populous and Gallup released a study called the Success Index that had some interesting findings. They asked interview subjects to rank 61 potential measures of success according to their own personal definition. According to the respondents, the top 10 measures of success were as follows. Does work that has a positive impact on other people, is on track for a secure retirement, is financially independent from others, is a parent, enjoys their work, is debt-free, is enjoyable to be around, has a purpose in life, is actively involved in their community, has strong ethical values. Interestingly, while these were the general trends, the researchers found that the results were highly individualized. According to the study, only 5% of individual respondents' top two priorities are identical to the average top two priorities for the general population, suggesting that the vast majority of Americans do not share what matters most for their definition of success. This means that the top two priorities for a respondent may have included something from the top 10, but may have also included something highly personal. Something like, is authentic, maintains boundaries between work and personal life, regularly sees family members, goes on vacation regularly, has close friends to depend on, or something else entirely. According to Populous and Gallup, the way we perceive success is already highly individualized and often includes values around having a meaningful life. However, we often forget this when it comes to our impressions of how most other people in society define success. When the interview subjects were asked to rank the 61 potential measures of success as defined by society, the results came out as follows. Is rich, owns a lot of luxury items, is famous, has an advanced degree, is a graduate of an elite college or university, owns a business, has a large social media following, is financially independent from others, has a high status job, is recognized as a leader in their profession. Isn't that interesting? These are the standards of success that we so often measure ourselves and others against. The ones that we use to puff ourselves up or tear ourselves down. What might it be like to stop comparing ourselves to these standards and to other people in our lives? How freeing might it be to acknowledge that while we all have equal worth, success does not need to look the same for everyone? How might it feel to let go of definitions of success that we have internalized but no longer resonate with who we are? What might it look like to allow the values of unconditional agape love to shape our visions of success? If you would find it helpful to discuss these questions together in a group setting, please join me upstairs after the service for chat with the pastor. Whether you're new to the river or have been around forever, I would love for you to come. We'll spend some time getting to know each other, discussing today's sermon, and then opening the conversation up to any faith questions on your mind. Also, the basement will be open for anyone who wants to eat, chat, and play games. Lunch will be available in both places, so please stick around. So as I invite the worship team up here, I'd like to pray a version of the Lord's Prayer over us. This version comes from the New Zealand Anglican Prayer Book. Eternal Spirit, Earth Maker, Pain Bearer, Life Giver, Source of all that is and that shall be, Father and Mother of us all, loving God in whom is heaven, the hallowing of your name echo through the universe, the way of your justice be followed by the peoples of the world. Your heavenly will be done by all created beings. Your commonwealth of peace and freedom sustain our hope and calm on earth. With the bread we need for today, feed us. In the hurts we absorb from one another, forgive us. In times of temptation and test, strengthen us. From trials too great to endure, spare us. From the grip of all that is evil, free us. For you reign in the glory of the power that is love, now and forever. Amen.